The following Dharma discourse was given by Jeffrey Shugen Arnold. Shugen Roshi is the abbot of both the monastery and the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or to find out more about our various programs, please visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
From the Master Woman's Gateless Gate, Case 31, Xiaozhou saw through the old woman. Main case. A student asked an old woman along the road, "Which way should I take to Mount Wutai?" The woman said, "Go straight on." When the student had taken a few steps, she remarked, "You may look like a fine student, but you too go off like that." Later, the student told Xiaozhou about it. Xiaozhou said, "Wait a while. I'll go and see through the old woman for you." The next day, off he went and asked her the same question. The old woman, too, gave him the same reply. When he returned, Xiaozhou said to the students, "I have seen through the old woman of Mount Wutai for you." Commentary. The old woman knew how to work out a strategy and win the victory while sitting in her tent. Yet she's not aware of the bandit stealing into the tent. Old Xiaozhou is skillful enough to creep into the enemy's camp and menace their fortress. Yet he does not look like a grown-up. Upon close examination, they are both at fault. Now tell me, how did Xiaozhou see through the old woman? Woman's poem. The question is the same each time. The answer, too, is the same. In the rice, there is sand. In the mud, there are thorns. So Happy New Year, everyone. Which way should I take to Mount Wutai? Mount Wutai was a sacred mountain, is a sacred mountain. Which way should I take to the center of the universe? Sometimes in the koans it's referred to as the capital. Dogen spoke of the inner chamber. We're at the beginning of a new year. A year of life sits before us. And in our ordinary lives, we wake up each day in a certain place. And we wake up to the needs of that day. For us, it's zazen and liturgy and work practice and study. For some of you, it's children, partners, taking care of parents, doing your work, taking care of the household, being involved in your community, the various interests that we have in our lives. And we speak of this as our Buddha field. The field in which each of us moves and functions and has influence. It's also the field in which we are influenced. It goes both ways. In which we create impact, affect change, and in the way in which we are impacted and changed. And for a bodhisattva, the Buddha field is the place in which we encounter suffering and we alleviate. All of the things within that field are there to be taken up for that express purpose. That is the bodhisattva vow and view and purpose. And then, you know, the things we do every day are compelling. They're the things of our life. They're what we do. They're how we take care of things. There are present and distinct needs, tangible things. If we don't do them, there are consequences. It's the stuff of our life. It's the outer expression of what? Of what? Is it just getting stuff done? Is it just things that we do, we take care of, we have a list we wake up to, we cross off the things on our list. Next day you wake up, there's another list. At the end of your life, we say about you, "Well, you almost got it all done." Which way should I take to Mount Wutai? To practice Buddha Dharma means to practice a path. We should not underestimate the importance of that, the power of that. It's a term, it's an idea that we could very easily just nod to and sort of toss aside. And in that, things can very easily just become things to do. Do we know that there is such a mountain? The mountain is such an important image in Buddhism, particularly in Chan, Zen, planted firmly, undividedly on and of the earth. It is inseparable, and it reaches up into the boundless sky. This student was seeking the way. They knew there's a path, knew that they needed to find this mountain, knew that they needed to ask for help. And asking, which way should I take? Implicit within that is knowing I could take a wrong turn. I could be moving in the wrong direction. I could not get there. The old woman said, go straight on. Student did exactly what she said. The old woman said, you look like a fine student, but you go off like all the others. You go off like that. Why did she say that? You go off like that. Like what? What should the student have done? What was the student's fault? Shibayama, in his commentary on this, says, for a sincere truth seeker, where could the way to Mount Wutai be? The way to Mount Wutai is the way to Zen. It is the way to the fundamental truth. And it has to be the way to oneself, one's true nature. What's the use of looking for it outwardly, away from your one's very self here and now? It's an old saying that all roads lead to Rome, also that the great way leads to Chang'an, which was a very amazing city in ancient China. There is no argument about east or west, right or left, time or space, for it is the one true way. Go straight on. What else could we say about this ultimate way? Shakyamuni taught Ananda, the truth is in all 10 directions. Straight is the way to nirvana. For a sincere truth seeker. And it's important when we speak of truth in this way that we understand that it is not an absolute. It's not a thing. It's not a changeable, relative thing. It doesn't change with the seasons or fashion or the time, but it's not a thing. It doesn't dwell somewhere. It's not in a book. It's not even in you. Can we be a sincere seeker and not know it? Can we seek without sincerity? Samsara means to turn from one direction to the next, to the next. And if you do that, when I was a kid, we used to go out in the yard and spin and spin and spin until we got so dizzy we'd fall down. That was fun. But of course, what was fun about it was then you lay down on the ground, dizzy as all hell, and the sky just turns and turns. We were training for samsara. And so in this turning, we seek pleasure, we avoid pain, we want to be affirmed. The Buddha said, we go about looking for how all the various ways in which I am this is me, this is mine. We look for affirmation, largely temporarily, often unskillfully, sometimes dangerously. I was thinking of, all the ways everyone, everywhere, it seems an irrepressible urge, impulse, need to connect, to find something, some place of affinity, some place to be. And so I was thinking of the so-called Proud Boys, the white nationalists, Antifa, election denialists, the agents of false information, anger seeking violence, defenders meeting anger with anger, self-centeredness governing the people. Are these just signs of pure absolute delusion? Or could they be signs of sincere seeking following misguided maps of the path from mildly to profoundly misguided and dangerously misguided maps of go straight ahead? If all of us, as Buddhism teaches, are driven by that fundamental drive, human drive towards happiness, equanimity, peace, but delusion turns things in our mind upside down. And so the more misguided we become, the more profoundly we are seeing the upside down nature. But are we at the same time seeing the drivenness of the person towards some mountain? Is there someone within each of us seeking the sacred mountain? I don't think that means each of us is on a path, not in the way that Buddhism believes it. It doesn't just mean wherever you are, whatever you're doing, you're on some sort of spiritual path. That seems clearly not to be the case. But it could also be, that could be true, and we could be trying to move towards something, no matter how misguided it might be, that Buddhism does understand as being moving towards the sacred mountain. Even though we don't know we're on a path, don't even give a damn about being on a path, or whatever that means, doesn't know there is a mountain, is not asking for help. All of those things are clearly possible. I was thinking about when I was a kid, very young, and sort of in my neighborhood, my group of friends, and seeing other groups of friends and groups that seemed more sort of excellent. You know, the cooler kids, the ones who had more power, who were more like where us outliers were sort of looking and feeling like a little bit of an outlier, an outsider, just within an ordinary childhood growing up. And then at some point, strangely, sort of unbeknownst to me, as I can recall how that happened, I sort of found myself in the midst of this group of what I thought were the cool kids. Not feeling quite like I belonged there. And so that was my insecurity, but there was something else. There was a kind of an outsider experience that I was having. These were my friends, but there was something that was missing. As I was, unbeknownst to me, trying to find my place in the world, with people, within myself. Dogen's poem again, drifting pitifully in the whirlwind of birth and death, as if wandering in a dream. In the midst of illusion, I awaken to the true path. There is one more matter I must not neglect. There was something missing. Something that was being neglected, even at that young, tender age. I remember a few years later when I was in grade school with my group of friends, that we used to just get into things, mischief, troublemaking. We called it raising hell. Let's go out and raise some hell, we would say. And we just go out and look for something to do. And I remember one time our principal called us in, Miss Willoughby. She was a very elderly, very small woman, very slight. She'd had polio, so she walked with a pretty significant limp, but she was very powerful. We were all pretty much afraid of her. She was very fair. She was a good person, but she was tough. And she called us in because she had heard some things and she wanted to kind of find out what were we up to, which we sort of took as a badge of courage that we had sort of made the headlines and, you know. And in the middle of this, we were sitting there, and she looked right at me, and she said, "You're at the center of all this." And I thought, what are you talking about? My perspective was I was a kid who was just following along with the leaders. That stayed with me, though. What was she talking about? A few years later in high school, I remember, and I wish I remembered more, but I just remember my English teacher, Ms. Helge, keeping me after class. I don't remember what happened before, what led up to this, and what happened afterwards, but she kept me after class. She was also a small woman because I remember looking down at her. And she was right in front of me and pointing at me and saying, "No man is an island." And I believe I don't know whether I said it or thought it, but I believe it was like, oh, I beg to disagree. I'm sure I didn't think of it that way exactly. What was she saying to me? What was she seeing? What was I neglecting? These were a couple of my old women on the way to Mount Wutai. I was not asking. I did not know that I was asking. Is it possible that we receive teachings when we're not asking for the teachings? That the teacher actually appears when the student is not yet ready? Is it possible that the student is ready and we don't know it? I could see that there were paths I did not want to follow. Paths that were not to me inspiring, that I had knew I had no faith in, that held for me no promise, observing other people who were following them, had followed them, parents, adults, older kids, some of my peers, where I would just look at them and think, no, that's not going to work out well. I was in high school, I was probably about 13 or 14, I worked in a restaurant after school, dishwasher. I was just a young boy. And I worked with an older man, African-American man, and I say his race because it's significant for our relationship. And I remember one night, I don't remember how, again, we got into this conversation, we were talking about Lester Maddox, who was a governor of Georgia in the early 70s, an explicit racist, and an avowed segregationist. And we were talking about him. And I remember this man telling me that, and I'm just a kid, saying that he would much rather face a known bigot than a dishonest smile. And I was shocked, kind of stunned by that. It's like he was telling me something that I, in a sense, wasn't quite ready to understand. I was still so young. But in another way, I did understand. There was something about what he was saying that I did understand. And that really made an impression on me. That he was saying, I would rather face what is true, even if it's my enemy, because it's a known enemy. I value the truth, even when it is dangerous. And as I was thinking about things, beginning to think about things, and had a sense of discontent, and also a sense that there must be some contentment in this world, realizing that I was going to have to be making choices about the course of my life, and that those would come from somewhere. Some sense of meaning, some sense of purpose, and that I wanted to be alive. That's what I knew. I wanted to be alive. And I felt like I saw many examples of not being alive. I knew it wasn't going to come from someone else, even from a book of sages. It was something that I was going to have to do. I was a part of this somehow. I was seeking something that I hadn't seen yet. In a sense, I was seeking to be a way that I had not seen yet, exampled in somebody, although I'd seen glimpses. And even at that early time, in that seeking, there was another matter I was neglecting that had not yet appeared. So this student here and goes straight on, walks off in that direction to Mount Wutai. This is not wrong. The old woman says, you look like a good student, but you too go off like that. This is where the koans are alive. In our narrow and self-tethered way of seeing and hearing, living in a dualistic world, we see things dualistically. We hear them dualistically. So clearly, the student has done something wrong, it would seem. Student's being criticized. But then why does the old woman say this? Until we meet this mountain, we have to move in the direction of our seeking. What else could we do? Looking for something outside, we turn to what is outside. A slogan, somebody else's idea, a belief, a group, a status, a role, a power, a relationship. When we realize this has got to come from within, we may not know what the hell that means. What does that mean? Sounds good. But when we have a sense that the mountain must exist within, we will still need to follow the direction that seems to lead us to that mountain, which ultimately is inward. But what does that mean, inward? Even as we know we are in some way still placing ourselves apart, we have to journey forth to ultimately find that place which is nowhere else but here. Is there actually a true mountain? Is there a living path? Is there a way to Mount Wutai? When I was in high school, I was working and spent several years working in animal hospitals after school and working with animals and just being with them, their clear, direct way of being. Happy, suffering, not so complicated. The owners who brought them in often seemed very complicated. And then when I worked on a couple of farms, an egg-laying farm and a dairy farm in upstate New York, egg-laying farmers in Georgia, and working with these farmers, living with them, working with them, and seeing the ways in which their lives were seemed to me to be just one thing. Like they didn't wake up and say, I got to go to work. They just woke up. It was all there, in a sense, their whole lives, this sense of integration, of life, of work, of purpose, of family, of community, of relationships. And did they ever teach me about work? What it was to work? What is it to work? As Dada would say, to combust our lives in the efforts of our day. I'd never seen anything like it. I'd never experienced anything like the way these farmers lived and cared about things. You know, we have these experiences and we walk away and sometimes we know we've been deeply affected and we reflect on them. And sometimes we don't know. But something lingers. Something lingers. Comes back around. I think of that as bodhicitta, the mind. The mind that is seeking, that is trying to sort things out, that is actually experiencing things in a limited way, because the mind is still limited, but it's still experiencing things and sort of integrating those experiences into what? Into just what do I do next, or into what is this world? What is this life? I was in high school. I took about a 10-day trip on a bike down to South Georgia with a friend to a commune named Koinonia that was founded by a Greek scholar, a scholar of the New Testament, who only read the New Testament in Greek. And he started a commune in what I consider very rough country. Folks down there might not like me to hear it described that way, but to me it was... Well, let me just say it looked like very rough country. Not beautiful was how I perceived it. Hot, dry, hard. And I lived there for these 10 days. It was a Christian commune, farm, peanuts, pecans that they used to support themselves by making food. And they also had a very dynamic relationship with the local community, in particular the African-American community, poor, largely farmers, going back generations, hard living, hard history. And they worked together, they lived there together, some of them, and that was what they were about. And the larger community, the white community, of course, did not like this one bit. KKK was very active, planted bombs, shot gunshots in the night. They told me not to go out at night. I had long hair, and they said, don't go out. You will not be safe if you go out. And actually, I just learned this. They were doing a kind of a building project where they made these very inexpensive homes, and then they would sell them to some of these families, African-American families, for a buck. And that was the beginning of what became Habitat for Humanity, which makes sense as to why Jimmy Carter was so involved with it, because this commune was only a few miles down the road from where he was born, lived. But at the end of the week, I was told that the local community had a little church service. And I don't know why I went there. I wasn't Christian. I wasn't looking to be Christian. I was much more of a solitary agent. I wasn't really looking to live on a commune. So why did I go to a Christian commune on my spring break? I wish I could tell you. I have no idea. I have no idea in my conscious mind. And the last day, I went to this morning church service, which the local black community had, just in a very small kind of cabin. No minister, no preacher. They just got up one at a time. Some of them just talked about their lives, talked about their faith. And it was the first experience I had of what I considered to be, what I perceived to be a living spirituality, a living religion. I realized this, for these folks, my sense was, this is life and death. This is life. This is alive. I knew it wasn't for me, but it was the first time I had experienced a sense of what I knew I was looking for was, is there something like that that exists, that is alive, and that you live? And they said to me, you are welcome here. This white city kid, long hair, encountering the Dharma for the first time I encountered those teachings, it was like something coming from a distant land, rising up from within myself, like meeting a stranger that you've known your whole life. You don't understand the language, but somehow there's a kind of intimate communication. How can that be explained? To encounter a path, that the recognition that people are actually willing to say, life is suffering. It's like, whoa. You just said that. You aren't afraid to say that. How refreshing. I think I'll lean in a little bit. What else do you have to say? There is a cause. It's not just suffering in the world. There is a cause. It's being created. There is liberation. I knew it. I knew it. And there's a path. I knew that. There had to be. There has to be. And so I sat down for the first time. So now going straight on underwent a minor revolution, the implications of which I had no idea of, no capacity, no ability to know or to see. But there was something I did know. Before it was even a path, before I had made any resolutions, made any commitments, begun to train, before I even knew there was something called training, I knew, kind of like a child knows about the world, that I had met what I was seeking. It's like I had met that old woman on the road. When Xiaozhou said, wait a while and I'll go see the old woman for you. What is it like when the mountain comes to the mountain? He asked the same question. She gave the same answer. Then he goes back to the monastery and says, oh, I saw through the old woman for you. That's all he said. He didn't say what happened. He didn't say what he did. He didn't say what that meant. He didn't say what he'd seen. He just said, I saw through the old woman. What did he see? What is the mind of Buddha? The teachings say it's the mind of all sentient beings. What is the mind of all sentient beings? It's Buddha mind. What is looking outwardly? What is seeking outside? Putting a head on top of the one we already have. Turning away from the self. We have these different ways of talking about something that we do. Abdicating responsibility, giving power to another, objectifying, imputing a sense of self into ourself, into our thoughts, into our emotions, into objects, into other people, into situations. Samsara is the result. It's also the cause. Confusion, ignorance, greed, fear, hatred, bigotry, righteousness, counter-righteousness are all of these misguided attempts to find the way to the mountain. They all have consequences, that we know. They all will fail. The Buddha was quite unequivocal about that. This path will not succeed. That's why he said, before my awakening, before his awakening, when he was unawakened, being subject to birth and illness and despair and sorrow, the thought occurred to me, why do I, being subject to all of these struggles, seek those very things that are also subject to those struggles? Suffering, why do I go to my suffering to try and find my release? Having been down this path again and again and again, having seen others go down this path again and again and again, seeing where it leads, why do I go down that path again? What if I were to, being subject myself to birth, seeing the drawbacks, were to seek a new way? If we want a different life, we have to choose a different path. It seems self-evident. It seems self-evident, but it obviously isn't. Sometimes that means walking a different road. It actually means making substantive changes in our life because we realize our life is not conducive the way we're living it to finding our way to the mountain. Certain things are going to have to change. It always means that there has to be a profound inner shift, inner journey, entering the dragon's cave, asking true questions, beginning to engage in language that addresses ultimate matters, wrestling with the self, wrestling with ideas that are radical to contemplate. And if this path is to be a true path, it cannot neglect what is essential, right? That would also seem self-evident. We can choose a false path, and we do that quite easily all the time, that does offer us some relief in the beginning. But in the beginning, we can't, I mean, think about it, we can't really know all that we need to know. As we seek liberation, we can't know in advance what do we need in order to experience liberation? What does the path need to contain to be a liberating path? How could we know that? And that's why it's so important to, do the best of our ability, find a path that is true and that will bring us to demand of us that we attend to those things that have been neglected, things that we didn't even know we were looking for. The question is the same each time. The answer, too, is the same. Outwardly, it appears so, but is that true? When the student asked, when Zhao Zhou asked, if you think back about, particularly those of us who've been practicing for a while, of what was driving us, what we were conscious of in the beginning, and then to think of those things at different points along the way. Are they the same? Are they different? The Buddha said it's like a river. It's the river, but you can't say it's the same, but you can't say it's different. Like a candle burning moment by moment. Rumi said, when you eventually see through the veils of how things really are, you will keep saying again and again, this is certainly not like I thought it was. This is not what I thought it was going to be. What I have discovered. And we begin to see that all along, in the river there is sand, in the mud there were thorns, that all along we were encountering teachers along the way. We are encountering situations, some of which actually got in the door. In the mind, in the ears, in the eyes, in our skin, in our awareness of a sincere seeker, a word, a gesture, a look, an action can shift the course of things, can light a candle in the dark night. It is essential to ask that question, what is the way to the sacred mountain? That is bodhicitta. The fact that we're alive doesn't necessarily mean that we're alive. We can be fooled by just being alive and think that that is alive. The enso, the haiku, the koan, a circle without closure, a poem without an explanation, a question that seems to defy rational thought. Each is complete and perfect. Nothing is neglected. The student has to complete the circle. Add the last line of the haiku. Realize the koan. Which way should I take to Mount Wutai? The fact that we may have encountered the Dharma, may be committed to the Dharma, doesn't mean that that question is finished. May it never be finished. As we gain more and more resolution, completion, fulfillment, peace. In the midst of illusion, I awaken to the true path. There is one more matter I must not neglect. What is that? Within the scars of the burning, older than time itself, there is a way. Within the faith calling to you without ceasing, there is a freedom. O person of great strength, please listen carefully to the eternal song calling you home from your wandering, bringing you here to the place of your one undivided. What was that one matter that I must not neglect that I was neglecting for so long? Don't you see? It was you.
Thanks for listening. Did you know that Zen Mountain Monastery is live streaming all Dharma talks and daily Zazen during the coronavirus quarantine? Visit our website to learn about all the online programs being offered at this time. Just go to zmm.org and click on the link at the very top of the page, or scroll down and click on Retreats.